take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Russ Melville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Melville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Tuesday, September 9th, 2014, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. We are back from Everett, Washington in the beautiful Pacific Northwest for the High Times Cannabis Cup. We were there this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, and I got to offer some big thanks to our volunteer crew out there that helped us so much during the event. Beth and Chris were out there. Chris going around in his chair there, got a lot of video for us. We also had Megan and Chad. That's right. Megan and Chad were there as well. Megan did most of the videos that we're going to be seeing today. We're going to be playing in hour two some of her vendor interviews from the High Times Cannabis Cup there in Seattle. Also, who else we got to mention? Oh, yes. Sarah Jane, Medicinal Jane from Facebook, who her and her father, Scott, put me up in his $1 million place up there in Snohomis, Washington. I almost felt guilty. It was just such luxury up there. And it just goes to show that this is really about the marijuana nation, this show. This is really about people getting together, helping each other out, and trying to spread the growing truth about cannabis. And thank you so much, volunteers. You know, I can't do this without you and you VIP supporters and you people that send the money in. I really, really appreciate it. This weekend really opened my eyes to a lot of things and to how good this movement can really be. So thank you so much. Also, wanted to talk a little bit about what's going on here at the International Cannabis Business Conference, which is taking place this weekend, Saturday and Sunday here in Portland, Oregon. I've got my bombshell stories up on the Huffington Post politics section. 4 stories on Clatsop County DA Josh Marquis, the leading opponent of Measure 91. Also, our investigative reporting on the Oregon marijuana election shenanigans. This is where they're trying to use taxpayer funds, or they were trying to use taxpayer funds to hold this educational event in Central Oregon just before we get our ballots mailed out to us. Of course, the education was going to be don't vote for marijuana legalization. Now, it's illegal for them to say that. They can't use state and federal anti-drug prevention funds to campaign against political candidates or initiatives. And they tried to get away with it like they did in 2012, where they were campaigning against our legalization initiative, Measure 80. Today, in Behind the Headlines, I'm going to show you some of that evidence from 2012. I've just put the new post up on RadicalRust.com. You can check it out in detail there. Plus, I've uploaded the PDF of their entire 4-page flyer from 2012 that proves that this is a political event, that they know it's a political event, and that they were trying to get away with doing it again as an educational event in 2014. We'll cover that in Behind the Headlines. Also, big thanks to Carl Wolfson and the folks at KXRY 91.1 FM here in Portland, Oregon. I appeared on their morning show today. Really early. It was like 7:30 in the morning, but we got to talk about the Oregon marijuana election shenanigans and the International Cannabis Business Conference this weekend. I'll be presenting there on Oregon's legalization proposal as part of a panel on California, Washington, Oregon, and Colorado's legalization strategies. All right, stay tuned. We got the 420 radio news next with some good news in the headlines for Benton McKenzie, the terminal cancer patient out of Iowa who was facing possible 15-year sentence. Philadelphia is going to decrim, and will possibly Pennsylvania go medical very soon? And we've got some surprising news from conservative U.S. senators, one who's trying to fight welfare for pot, the other one who thinks that legalization's a state's rights issue. All that's coming up in the 420 radio news on the 2-hour Russ Melville Show. Thanks for joining us. We're back right after this.
Russ Melville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio, the activist radio station.
Join us for the International Cannabis Business Conference September 13th and 14th in the Portland Ballroom at the Oregon Convention Center. The International Cannabis Business Conference will focus on the emerging cannabis industry in Oregon, the United States, and around the world, putting you in front of the industry's foremost entrepreneurs, political leaders, and attorneys. Also showcasing over 40 cannabis-related industry exhibitors, offering VIP lunches and free nightly networking events. Prepare yourself for America's next great industry.
Marijuana Compassion and Common Sense, replaying Tuesdays at 10 Pacific on...
Mike Schwab is a former middle school science and math teacher. Currently, he works with children daily as an after-school program leader.
Currently, kids have easy access to marijuana with little understanding of its impact. We can take better care of our kids through Measure 91 with strict regulations and funding for proven marijuana education and prevention programs to keep kids from using it. Under our current marijuana laws, one mistake can ruin a life. Measure 91 removes unfairly harsh punishment for marijuana offenses and gets more tax money to local police and drug prevention. Vote yes on 91.
It's time for the 420 Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Transcripts of 420 Radio News are available daily on our website at 420radio.org.
Now, here's Russ Belville with your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds.
This is your 420 Radio News for Tuesday, September 9th, 2014. Good news to report out of Iowa, where District Judge Henry Latham has sentenced terminal cancer patient Benton McKenzie and his caregiver wife to just probation. Benton was arrested 1 year ago in Iowa for growing the marijuana plants he uses to treat angiosarcoma, a rare cancer of the blood vessels. He faced at least 3 years and as much as 15 years in prison, a virtual death sentence, when jurors convicted him of the Class C felony of marijuana manufacture. Jurors were not allowed to hear evidence of McKenzie's medical use at trial this summer. McKenzie has become a medical marijuana patient in Oregon, where in-state residency is not required, and is seeking permission to return to Oregon for the cannabis oil treatments that he's been using and hopes he can get those under the terms of his probation. Iowa is one of the states that permits the use of CBD oil for intractable epilepsy, but Benton neither has epilepsy nor benefits from cannabis oil lacking in THC. Philadelphia Mayor Michael Nutter has relented and agreed to sign a marijuana decriminalization passed by the city council with a veto-proof majority. Currently, marijuana possession in the city of Brotherly Love is a misdemeanor with a $200 fine for marijuana possession, required attendance at drug abuse courses, and an arrest record. The new law makes possession a mere $25 infraction with no arrest record. At the mayor's insistence, the author of the bill, City Councilman Jim Kenney, will amend the law to include a $100 infraction fine for public smoking of marijuana. Said Kenney, quote, "We've gotten to a place where it is out of the criminal realm. There's no more handcuffs, no more bookings, no more criminal record. Police will not have to leave their posts and go to the station house to deal with this. People will pay a fine based on the offense. $25 for the possession of anything under an ounce," end quote. Meanwhile, in the Pennsylvania state capital of Harrisburg, sponsors of a whole plant medical marijuana bill are preparing to do battle with a governor who only supports CBD legislation. The bill, called the Compassionate Use of Medical Cannabis Act, passed the Senate's Law and Justice Committee unanimously on June 27th. On September 15th, the new session begins with a vote in the Appropriations Committee, after which it could be voted on by the full Senate. But even though a recent Quinnipiac poll showed 85% of Pennsylvania voters support some form of medical marijuana, Governor Tom Corbett has promised to veto any medical marijuana bill that isn't his favored CBD-only legislation just for kids with epilepsy. Advocates are pushing for supermajorities to pass the bill and override the governor's veto. Alabama Senator Jeff Sessions is targeting welfare recipients who use marijuana, but this time it's not about drug testing them. Senator Sessions called upon the Department of Health and Human Services, or HHS, to explain whether electronic benefits cards, the EBT cards used like debit cards, can be used to purchase marijuana in the newly legal pot shops in Colorado and Washington. While federal law passed in 2011 does prohibit the use of EBT cards at liquor stores, strip clubs, and casinos, the law does not address marijuana shops. Colorado is already crafting drafting legislation to ban EBT use at pot shops, as HHS Secretary Burwell informed Senator Sessions, quote, "In fact, states have the flexibility to prevent TANF assistance from being used in any type of establishment they deem inappropriate," end quote. Senator Sessions, however, wants the prevention done at the federal level, explaining that federal welfare money, quote, "is administered by a vast, sprawling bureaucracy with little oversight and no moral vision," end quote. Meanwhile, in Kansas, another stalwart Republican conservative is describing marijuana legalization as, quote, "a state issue," end quote. Senator Pat Roberts fought off a Tea Party challenger in his primary. Following the unexpected withdrawal of the Democrat in the race, Senator Roberts is in a neck-and-neck race with an independent candidate named Greg Orman. In a recent debate, Senator Roberts explained that marijuana legalization is, quote, "not a federal issue, that's a state issue. If you want to get at Rocky Mountain High, go west. That should be for the Kansas legislature and the governor to decide, not federally," end quote. His challenger Orman responded, quote, "We've had a federal policy in this country since the Nixon administration that doesn't seem to be working. We spent over $1 trillion on it. With that said, like the senator mentioned, we do have states that have started to work with different policies as it relates to legalization, and I think it would be prudent for us to take a step back, watch what happens in these states before we determine how we want to change federal policy," end quote. Toto, I don't think we're in Kansas anymore. This has been your 420 Radio News for Tuesday, September 9th, 2014.
420 Radio, the home of marijuana experts.
Despite strong public support for medical cannabis, decriminalization, and legalization in Georgia, the state spends $121 million every year to arrest, prosecute, and imprison Georgians for simple possession. Each year, the state of Georgia spends less on driver services, agriculture, and forestry combined. What else can $121 million a year do in Georgia? With that much money, the state could hire and keep 3,000 more teachers, improve roads and bridges, provide tax relief for small businesses, repair aging sewage systems, or lower taxes. But right now, that's millions of dollars of your tax money wasted on failed enforcement. Tell your representative you're tired of wasteful spending and ask them to end cannabis prohibition. Join the conversation at www.peachtreenormal.org. Peachtree Normal is a proud affiliate of Normal, the national organization for the reform of marijuana laws.
Congressman Andy Harris thinks it's okay for medical marijuana patients to go to federal prison, even though Maryland passed a medical marijuana bill in April. On May 30th, Congressman Harris voted against an amendment to respect Maryland laws and protect Maryland patients. Why would Congressman Harris vote to send patients like this to prison? 72% of Maryland residents support medical marijuana. Is Congressman Harris out of touch with Maryland?
I don't use marijuana, but as a teacher of 36 years, I can tell you lots of other people use it. I don't believe in prohibition. I don't think it works. Prohibiting it hasn't stopped anybody from getting a hold of it. I would like to see it regulated so that maybe kids can't get a hold of it so easily. I know they get a hold of it now very easily. I support a new approach to marijuana. I support legalizing it. It's with us. It's not going to go away. And if we can get money through the taxation, we can also educate our kids about it. That's why I support it.
Welcome back, everybody. 14 after the hour, and time for us to go behind the headlines. And as you know, I've been reporting on this Oregon Marijuana Education Summit and tour that's supposed to be taking place in October, and the scramble by all the people involved to get the federal funds out of it and to fund it with their own private money, despite the fact that they keep claiming that is simply an educational summit. It's only about education. Well, we've got some new evidence to uncover here in this story, because as Rick Treleaven of Best Care Prevention, one of the prime sponsors that pulled out of this year's summit, had to say, quote, "The summit has been held for several years in October," end quote, "and never received any complaints before." Oh, really? Like in 2012, when Oregon was voting on a marijuana legalization initiative called Measure 80? As the ballots for Measure 80 were being mailed out, Best Care Treatment Services was sending out Save the Date flyers for the October 18th, 2012 Statewide Marijuana Summit, also to be held in Madras, Oregon, just like the current summit. Kevin Sabet was slated to be the feature speaker, even though he wasn't listed on the flyer, just like the current summit. Eric Martin was listed to be a featured speaker, just like the current summit. Now, Shirley Morgan was listed as a speaker, and her bio from a 2013 anti-legalization conference sponsored by the Coalition for a Drug-Free California and the Drug-Free America Foundation explains her bona fides. Quote, Ms. Morgan is also the founder of the Oregonians Against Legalization of Marijuana, a grassroots community group that was successful in November of 2004 and 2010 in Oregon, defeating measures that would have required local government agencies to open up pot dispensaries. And then again in November of 2012, defeating a measure that would have legalized marijuana. End quote. So Shirley Morgan was speaking at the 2012 event at the same time she was the leader of Oregonians Against Legalization of Marijuana, at the same time the legalization of marijuana was on the ballot. Now this year, Rick Treleaven of Best Care explained that they pulled their $15,000 of government grant money from the summit because he, quote, could see from an outside perspective that it could look like a conflict, end quote. Well, if it's a conflict now, when the speakers are telling folks that the summit won't be discussing Measure 91 at all, just a week before we get our ballots, if it was a conflict now, then why was it not a conflict in 2012 when you had Shirley Morgan and Kevin Sabet openly opposing Measure 80 at the summit during the week of the ballot mailings? Did $15,000 or maybe even more in federal grant money get used to promote and produce the 2012 summit? The flyer indicates that it is, quote, full day training, it's free, end quote. Does that indicate that in 2012, like this year, law enforcement professionals can earn their continuing education credits for attending? The flyer also adds, quote, provided at summit, food, prizes, childcare, Spanish translation, end quote. Which certainly somebody paid for. Best Care also worked with county drug prevention staff in Deschutes County to produce advertisements based on the education that was presented at the 2012 summit. The public was called upon to contact county staff on their county email addresses and phone lines to acquire radio and internet ads that the public could use to, quote, provide factual information so that citizens can make informed health-related decisions based on credible data, end quote. It continued, quote, the information learned at the summit became a catalyst, end quote, for the production of an educational brochure on marijuana facts. This brochure, this educational brochure for health-related decisions that was possibly paid for by taxpayer money, made no attempt to hide its anti-legalization political nature. Included in the four-page brochure, quote, what about marijuana legalization? Advocates of marijuana claim legalizing it will result in economic revenue and reduce drug trafficking cartels. Research shows if legalized, marijuana use will go up, resulting in more social cost to society. Ultimately, the question is this: is the right to get high and buy legal pot worth the risk to kids in the form of greater addiction and learning deficits? The risk to society to have another legal entity advertising an addictive substance? And the risk to our economy in the form of greater safety and health costs like car crashes, the cost of healthcare, and the cost of a newly regulated system. Footnoted, Kevin Sabet, October 18th, 2012, Oregon Statewide Marijuana Summit. That is a direct quote of what Sabet was saying in 2012 on an honorarium that was paid to him through Best Care Prevention Services that was most likely federal taxpayer dollars. Also in the brochure, what states have marijuana legalization ballot measures in 2012? According to the polls, of the three states with marijuana legalization ballot measures, Oregon is least likely to pass. That was a table that compared and contrasted Oregon's Measure 80, Washington's I-502, and Colorado's Amendment 64 legalization proposals provided by Eric Martin, who was also speaking at the 2014 summit. So Kevin Samet was openly discussing what he imagined to be the pitfalls of marijuana legalization. Eric Martin was comparing and contrasting legalization proposals. And Shirley Morgan was leading Oregonians against legal marijuana while speaking at the 2012 summit. And Best Care in Jefferson County was sponsoring it, presumably with taxpayer money. Now, only in 2014 did they complain about this. That's right, only in 2014, when a better-funded and more politically savvy campaign complained about it, did Oregon officials recognize the summit's clear political intent, and only then did Best Care and others begin withdrawing their support. So shall we look back to 2010, when Oregon had Measure 74, a dispensary initiative, on the ballot, to see where they misspent the money there? We're back with my presentation, right now.
All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the High Times Cannabis Cup Seattle in Everett. It's a long tradition that we have here at the Cannabis Cups. I'm Radical Russ Belville. I'm the host of the Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org. And for being here today, you all get a free sticker, 420 Radio sticker, card, and this legalized marijuana poster featuring 13 quotes from United States presidents about hemp or marijuana. So thank you for being here. I know there's a lot of fun going on outside, and for you guys being here, I thought you all deserve something special. So my gig is that I'm the host of the Russ Belville Show on 420 Radio, which is 24-hour marijuana legalization talk radio. You can get it online at 420radio.org, or you can get it on your smartphone through TuneIn Radio. You do the TuneIn Radio app, search for 420 Radio, something will be on. Mostly talk radio. We have 25 shows, 22 of them from the United States, two of them from Canada, and one from Europe. And we have five different live music shows that go on. So there's always something on 420 Radio. My show's on 3 o'clock every weekday, 3 to 5. And I cover the news, and I do interviews with doctors and lawyers and politicians and celebrities and anybody involved with weed. A lot of the activists here, as a matter of fact, and vendors, too. And I also do what are known as radical rants, my little opinion pieces on the state of legalization and medical and so forth. So I used to work for Normal from 2008 through 2012, and then in 2012 I started doing this independently, and now I've traveled to 20 different states, 40 cities, and logged about 150,000 air miles trying to convince Americans to end marijuana prohibition. That's what we all want, right? We just want to be treated as equals. I figure we're a country that's figured out how to live with beer drinkers and cigar smokers. We can figure out how to live with marijuana consumers. You know, marijuana has smoke like cigars. It impairs a little like alcohol. We figured out how to deal with that. Let's figure out how to deal with cannabis. Of course, Washington State, Colorado have taken the first steps. I'm from Portland, Oregon, and we are taking the next step. We are going to be legalizing an ounce on the street, a half pound at your house, four plants at your house, 16 ounces of edibles, 72 ounces of tinctures, a full ounce of concentrate. And not only will that be legal, twice that amount will be decrim. You can have a pound of weed in your house and just get a ticket under what's going on in Oregon. You can have eight plants in your house and just get a ticket under what we're proposing with Measure 91. I'm going to be going into great detail about this next weekend. If any of you happen to be in the Portland area, next weekend, the International Cannabis Business Conference is taking place. We've got Congressman Blumenauer, we've got Andrew Sullivan from the Daily Dish is coming in, and it's going to get a lot of international attention, a lot of big network news next weekend in Portland, Oregon. I'll be presenting there as well. You can check that out on internationalcbc.com, internationalcbc.com, next weekend in Portland. All right, so today's presentation is entitled The Top 10 Lies About Marijuana Legalization and the Sound Bites You Need to Debunk Them. Because I work in the media world, and when you're dealing with reporters, newspaper, radio, television, or internet, they're on deadline. They got a story to pump out, and they don't have time to sit to you, listen to you talk about the history of hemp and how it was a lie and DuPont and Hearst and yada, 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 yada. They don't have the time for that. They need a headline. They need a soundbite. They need a conflict. They need a story. So the purpose of this is to give you an idea of how to deliver that story so that you can get your words, your quotes, and your point of view into the media and into people's mind quickly and easily. And here's some of the techniques I've designed to make that happen. First of all, the thing we need to understand as we're now fighting in this war on drugs is we're winning. We're winning the war on drugs, which always reminds me of Bill Hicks, the comedian, who said, when George H.W. Bush said that we're losing the war on drugs, that kind of implies that there's a drug war and the people on drugs are winning it. And we are, because we've largely captured the American attention. 58% nationally is the latest Gallup poll for support for marijuana legalization. A recent civic science poll that tracked over May through August of this year pegged support at 61%. So we don't have to play defense anymore. We don't have to defend why it's a good idea to legalize. They have to defend why it's a good idea to keep locking us up. And that's what we're going to attack with this. The other good news is that legalization is not an abstract anymore. Used to be when you were trying to convince people we're going to legalize marijuana, you're asking them to imagine the Land of Oz. There's no place on earth where it was legal, nothing they could compare it to, nothing they could imagine. Well, now there's two states, Colorado and Washington, where there is a concrete example of legalization. So they can't play these scare tactics anymore like they used to, where they'd try to frighten us to what terrible things would happen when marijuana is legalized. So our opponents right now are doing what I call a flood defense. They're trying to flood the airwaves with this confused thinking and lies about marijuana. The flood defense is frighten people. Bad things are going to happen if we legalize. Oh, bad things will happen. Or just flat out lie or tell a half truth. Bad things are happening in Colorado and Washington. Really? And they find a way to kind of twist a statistic or a story to make it seem as if something bad's happening. Overstate what has happened. Oh, this statistic coming out of Colorado shows that legalization's a failure, when in fact it doesn't, and we'll show you why. Obfuscate. That's just a fancy word for saying confuse people. Throw up dust clouds, smoke screens. Get them to think about anything but what's going on, which leads, of course, to the next one. And I call that the land of but ifs. Oh, yes, we could raise taxes on marijuana, but if we had this happen, but if this happened, but if that happened, hey, let's get rid of the but ifs. Let's talk about the original subject here. And then deflection. Deflection is one they often use this with alcohol and tobacco, right? Well, you know, alcohol and tobacco cost X, Y, and Z. I ain't talking about alcohol and tobacco. We're here to talk about cannabis, aren't we? Right? Don't let them deflect off the subject. They have to, because a lot of people aren't scared of marijuana anymore as a subject. So here's how we win the soundbite war. Think of it like a boxing match. So, excuse me, just a minute. So if we think of this like a boxing match, we're going to establish our jab. And the jab is what I call the 6-second soundbite. Something when they say one of their talking points, you just go bop right in the nose. The former heavyweight champion Mike Tyson used to say, everybody has a plan until they get hit in the mouth. And he's right. That's what these 6-second sound bites are about, is keeping it punchy and keeping it simple, making it so that reporter scrawling it down can get it pretty accurately without having to go back to his tapes or anything else. And it's also good after your jab if you have a follow-up hook. Get their attention with the jab, follow up with the hook. And the hook is literally trying to get the listener brought over to your side. And oftentimes, a good way to do that is an evocative question. Try to come up with a question that forces them to go, yeah, gee, why is it that nobody who grows wine grapes grows them in national forests? Little things that make them think about the status quo of prohibition and question why we do the things the way we do them. Then we want to go to the body blow. This is going to take the wind out of their arguments. The body blow is your clever statistic. When you bring up a clever statistic, it forces the newspaper reporter to have to go to the internet or wherever to verify that statistic, and forces him to ask follow-up questions to your opponent based on that statistic. Now, your opponent's arguing against stats, not you. And those stats oftentimes come from the state or federal government. So now you got state and federal stats on your side, makes their job a lot harder. I always think when you're telling a statistic, fractions beat percentages. If I tell you, for example, that 33% of American kids between the ages of 18 and 25 use marijuana once a year, and 20% of them use it at least once a month, or sorry, I got that backwards, 20% once a year, 30, yeah, anyway. But if I say that as 1 in 3 smoke marijuana annually, 1 in 5 smoke marijuana monthly, that sticks a little better than 33%, 23%. Plus, percents sound impersonal. Percents sound artificial. One in five makes you go, one, two, three, four, five of us, one of us has to be a monthly pot smoker. You think of the people around you when I say one in three or one in five. And if you can, make it personal, because it is. The drug warriors want to keep this in the land of statistics and abstracts and policy and what ifs and but ifs. Bring it back to the personal. When I debated Kevin Sabet directly, I said, excuse me, Kevin, you keep talking about these marijuana addicts, people that smoke marijuana on a regular basis. That's me. Am I an addict? Well, I wouldn't say about you personally because I don't know. Wait a minute. You've been talking about people that smoke marijuana every day as addicts. Am I an addict? That made him very nervous. Didn't want to have to get in the personal. And then the knockout. The knockout is your closer where you expose their flood defense, where you point out why they're trying to scare people and, you know, it's the emperor wears no clothes moment. I don't know what that adjust is up there, but we'll keep going. So here we go. We got the top 10. I could have put 20 on this presentation, but we're stopped for time. So by the way, as we go through this, and if you're taking notes or anything like that, these PowerPoints are available at RadicalRust.com or at 420radio.org in our shop. It's usually $4.20 to download them because yeah, I got to pay for gas and such. But you can download these and use them all you like and steal the lines from them if you want because that's why I make them. So number 10. The new big tobacco fear. Have you heard this one? Marijuana is going to be the new big marijuana is going to be the big tobacco, a predatory industry that tries to addict our children. Fear, fear. Here's an example.
It's already in 18 states. It's going even further. And before we know it, we're going to wake up one day and we're going to have another tobacco industry. It's going to be called the marijuana industry. We already know what big tobacco did to our kids. Joe Camel targeting kids.
Jab. No teenager alive has ever seen Joe Camel. It's true. The Joe Camel ads ended in 1998. No teenager alive today has ever seen Joe Camel. And since we've learned the lessons of big tobacco, why don't we apply them to marijuana as we start the movement? Statistic, here's our body blow. Teen smoking has dropped from 7 in 10 teenagers when I was in high school to 4, less than 4 in 10 teenagers to high school kids today. So since we figured out how to tame big tobacco, don't you think we could figure out how to tame big marijuana? And then expose the flood. Since marijuana is not so scary, they're trying to scare you with something else that is cigarettes. Number 9, the new drug fear. Oh no, we're going to have a third legal drug. We're going to have a new legal drug trying to convince us somehow that people growing, buying, and selling marijuana illegally is less scary than people selling it legally. Kind of a weird position, but here they go.
We already have enough problems with our two legal drugs, alcohol and tobacco. They're widely promoted by an industry that lives off of other people's addiction. They're widely normalized, advertised. I don't think we need another problem in society, and marijuana would do that.
Jab. Newsflash, pot's here. There's no new legal drug. Legalization doesn't invent marijuana. It's already been around here most all of our lives. And what more predatory industry could you have than an illegal drug dealer? How much more predatory could you get? Body blow. 108 million Americans have tried marijuana. Some of them even became president. One of them won the most gold medals ever. Knockout. Expose the flood. The scary thing isn't legalizing marijuana. It's continuing to ruin people's lives over it. Number 8. The addicted kids lie. This is where prohibitionists take some studies and statistics about teenage marijuana use, and they twist them and distort them to create this risk that's really more exaggerated than it is. And understand that none of this is about saying we suggest kids ought to be smoking marijuana. We're talking about legalizing 21 and up, aren't we? But they always want to bring it back to the kids because what about the children is something that activates a primal fear in most parents and gets them to ignore logic and reason. So here's how we counter that.
We know that one out of every six kids that try marijuana will become addicted to it, okay? That's not six out of six, but that's probably something and plenty to worry about.
jab. What he means is one out of six kids who tries pot continues smoking it as an adult. He is trying to say that an adult who uses pot by default is an addict. The only way the statistics makes any sense is if you consider a joint on the weekend as an addiction. And here's the stat to back it up. According to the National Surveys on Drug Use and Health, 60 million Americans tried pot when they were teenagers. 10 million Americans still smoke pot at least once a week. That's your one out of six. So if he's saying one out of six kids who tried pot as teens became an addict, he's referring to the 10 million Americans who smoke pot once a week or more. And I don't think a once a week pot smoker is an addict. Otherwise, we're going to have to take a look at a whole lot more alcoholics in this country, if that's the way we design who's an alcoholic. Number seven, the IQ loss lie. Have you heard this one? Kids smoke pot, they're going to lose 8 IQ points. They're going to, you know, fail and just be terrible in life, you know, like Barack Obama or somebody, Steve Jobs, Sir Richard Branson. But this is where the prohibitionists purposefully ignore contradictory evidence in order to try to make their point about marijuana and the teenage brain.
Heavy persistent use leads to significant IQ loss among young people.
Heavy persistent use leads to significant IQ loss. Here's the jab. It's debunked. The same journal that published that IQ study published another researcher's analysis of that data a year later, who was able to find other socioeconomic factors that caused the IQ loss. It wasn't the pot that caused the IQ loss. It was that the pot-smoking kids were poor and lower class. And all the things that affect education and environment in those respects also led to the IQ loss. Also, it's hard to understand why, when global IQ scores have been rising steadily, even as pot use has been rising steadily, it hasn't seemed to have made a dent in the global IQ. And no, again, emphasize this, whenever they get around the kids subject, that nobody's talking about legalizing marijuana for kids. We want it in adults-only stores that check ID. There's also stats to back that up. If you go to Colorado, they did a sting where they tried to send underage narcs to the pot shops to see if any of them could buy weed. Zero. Not one pot shop would sell weed to an underage kid. They did a similar sting for alcohol in bars and restaurants. 28. Found 28 retailers out of like 70 that they tested that were selling to underage kids. Number six. The car crash overstatement. If the previous one was what about the children, that's something I like to call WOTC. What about the children, WOTC? The second one they like to use is SMOF, stoned mayhem on the freeways. If we legalize, there'll be blood on the highway. It'll be terrible. It'll be wrecks and carnage, right? Well, here's the way they do this is they take a statistic that is somewhat true and then make a mountain out of a molehill out of it. They over-exaggerate the risk.
The British Medical Journal told us a few months ago that their most comprehensive study they've ever done showed that marijuana intoxication doubles your car crash risk.
Marijuana intoxication doubles your car crash risk. Now, this British Medical Journal study said within 3 hours of smoking pot. He leaves that part out. But here's your jab. Legalization does not invent cars and marijuana or legalize DUI. If there was going to be a great danger from stone drivers, don't you think we'd have seen it by now? People already smoke pot, cars already exist. If there was going to be some danger, as pot went up from 10 million people smoking it in 1974 to 100 million people smoking it today that have smoked it, we'd have seen some problems by now. And other studies show that the car crash risk, that twice the level of risk, is also found in penicillin and antihistamines. Drivers with antihistamines in their system have twice the car crash risk of those sober drivers. Drivers with penicillin in their systems have twice the car crash risk. Drivers with pot in their systems have twice the car crash risk. And then the flood. Cops bust stone drivers now, and they should still bust them after legalization. Nobody's talking about legalizing DUI. Now, sometimes this DUI stuff, you can get a little lost in the weeds because there's nanograms and there's tests and there's blood tests and there's all of that. And that can be a little distracting to the audience sometimes. If the nanogram thing comes up, the easiest soundbite for that is there is no scientifically reliable number to dictate whether someone's too impaired to drive. Even the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration says that. Our own federal government says it's inadmissible to try to use bodily fluids alone to determine the impairment of a driver. All right, number five, the Woodstock weed overstatement. This is for us older tokers out there. When they try to separate us from the younger folks by saying, well, yeah, you may have smoked pot in your dorm room, but this pot today.
I mean, we know that today's marijuana is not your marijuana of the Woodstock days of what people might have smoked in their dorms pretty harmlessly in the 60s or 70s. It's 5 to 7 times more potent.
Anybody remember the 60s? If you do, you weren't there. Today's marijuana is stronger, but since it's non-toxic, that's irrelevant. High is high. If you have something more potent, you just get too high with less smoke, which is actually a good thing, isn't it? And the data, the federal government's own potency figures show that the average potency of seized marijuana in the United States has just about doubled, not 5 to 7. And then show the fear for what it is. Marijuana prohibition is just as stupid today as it was during Woodstock. Now, sometimes I've got some other things that I'll throw in here. Like, one I like to throw in is when they say, like, sometimes you'll catch one that goes way overboard. The marijuana today is 25 times stronger than the marijuana of Woodstock. Well, let's see. Since the marijuana today reaches as high as 25%, you're saying Woodstock weed was 1%. And you're telling me all those people in the summer of love and making that great music and wearing those weird clothes were smoking 1% THC? Uh-uh. No, sir. I've seen the Woodstock movie. Number four, the Goldilocks obfuscation. Here's where we're going to confuse and throw up some smoke screens. What they're trying to do here is to defend the fact that nobody supports the drug war anymore. 7% of the American public believes the war on drugs is worth fighting. Seven. Hard to defend that, right? So what they're trying to do is say, oh, no, not us. We're not the drug war guys. We've got a new approach. We think that legalization is too soft, but prohibition is too hard, and our approach is just right. That's why I call it the Goldilocks approach, right? So check this one.
That means we would reject either extreme dichotomy, and that's what Project Sam is about. On the one hand, old policies of incarceration and prohibition, but on the other hand, what is sort of being rebranded as new, but is not new, legalization.
So this is how Kevin and the prohibitionists try to separate themselves from we're not the drug war bad guys, we're just about treatment and prevention, and we want to help the addicts, right? He's trying to carve a new niche. Instead of sending all those prisoners to prison, let's send them to rehab. We'll still have a pipeline of money. We'll just redirect where the pipeline's going. Here's how to attack that. It's the market, stupid. Either the marijuana market is regulated and legal, or it is illegal and dangerous. These guys always want to keep it on the user, make it seem like, oh, well, we just want to give you guys rehab and tickets, and we'll be all nice to the user. Stop them and say, what do you want to do to the grower? What do you want to do to the seller? Well, they still want to lock them up. So marijuana's not going anywhere. Why do we let cartels, criminals, and kids control it? It's not going anywhere. For my home state, this is a line I've been using, and you can find your own statistic. 1 in 9 adult Oregonians uses marijuana, and the law considers them all criminals. And again, that 1 in 9, people go, wait a minute, 4, 5, 1 in 9 people? And point out that what he's proposing, that these new middle ground proposals are just a kinder, gentler drug war in disguise. I love that phrase, the kinder, gentler drug war. Number three, the nice dreams obfuscation. This is where, you know, if you followed any of the news coming out of Mexico and the Mexican drug war, it's horrific. You know, everybody's upset about these ISIS beheadings that are happening in the Middle East, 2 beheadings. I've covered thousands of beheadings in Mexico over these drug cartels. I've covered stories where people are in rush hour traffic in Monterrey and a dump truck in front of them opens up the lid, stops in the middle of freeway rush hour traffic, opens up the back of the dump truck, and pushes headless bodies onto the freeway roadway and drives off. You don't hear this in the American media, but it's happening in the Mexican drug war. And when you bring that up, they got to get away from that as quick as they can. That's a deadly story for them.
A prohibitionary left violence does not come from marijuana. Let's be very clear. The marijuana trade is not especially violent. Most people do not buy pot. They get it from a friend or family member.
So here he's saying, oh, yeah, Mexican cartels are bad, but most people don't deal with Mexican cartels. Most people have a guy. They go see their guy, or they know a guy who grows, right? Most of that Mexican stuff, that's so far away and distant from what we're talking about. That's what he's trying to do here. Here's how you tackle it. Friend, family, dealer, or cartel, they're all still treated like criminals. Sure, and during Prohibition, most drinkers didn't get their alcohol directly from Al Capone either. But there were over 750,000 marijuana arrests last year, and each one of them was someone's family. We cannot ignore that every part of the illegal market contributes to the worst parts of the illegal market. Bring him back, tie it all together. Make him have to defend Mexican torturers. Speaking of, number two, the Mexican deflection. Now, this is the one where this happened. This started in Prop 19 in California in 2010 when people started saying, hey, if we legalized, we could put these cartels out of business. If there were legal companies doing this, these cartels wouldn't make all that money off of it. And that's been a very compelling argument as well. So they have to try to find a way to distance themselves from that.
15% of cartels, according to RAND, 15 to 20% get it from marijuana. Right. Big enough chunk to worry about. Yeah, right. Big enough chunk to worry about, not the vast majority. If you're worried about organized crime, though, the answer is not in marijuana. That's just not where the action is. It's in the other drug.
So even our opponent will admit 15 to 20% of the Mexican cartel revenue is from marijuana. Stick it to them. 15% or 1.5%. Why should we let criminals make any profit on marijuana? As far as I'm concerned, when it comes to murdering Mexican cartels, I think depriving them of any profit is a good idea. And the media have already reported on Mexicans that are giving up on pot farming. Giving up on it because the prices are starting to crash on them because of legalization. And you don't see cartels fighting over Dos Equis and Corona beer, do you? That brings it back to, oh yeah, Mexico, and we can have something from Mexico that's all right. That talking point, I think, is one of the most odious. Well, they're only making 15 to 20% on marijuana. Let's just let them keep making it. When we can take it away from them? And number one, this is by far the number one talking point that's exasperating to me, the social cost deflection. This is the one where they try to say, well, alcohol and tobacco are awful. Yeah? So, we're talking about marijuana, aren't we?
For every dollar we get on alcohol and tobacco tax in this country, we spend $10 in lost social costs. So, people that look at this know this is actually a loss leader.
This is a brilliant deflection because what he said is absolutely true. We bring in $40 billion in alcohol and tobacco taxes every year. Alcohol and tobacco cost society $400 billion every year. But that's because they are toxic and addictive. Not because they're legal. They're toxic and addictive. They cause cancer and cirrhosis and drunk driving and spousal abuse and emphysema and cancer and death. That's why they cost $400 billion a year. And whatever marijuana costs society, we're paying it now and taking in no tax revenue whatsoever. And Colorado already has raked in $30 million in revenue. Someone want to show me where the $300 million in social cost is in Colorado? In fact, their crime is down 6%, crime is down 5.2%. Home values are up. Tourism is up. I mean, there's a lot of benefits, much less the cost that they're not spending on arresting people for pot anymore. And you ever notice how much the anti-pot people like to talk about alcohol and tobacco? Yeah, because marijuana is not that scary anymore to them. So there's the idea. Take your soundbite, make a jab out of it, make sure you got something that'll fit in 6 seconds. Practice saying it to yourself. Get those words to roll right off your tongue. So if that camera gets in your face, you get that stage fright, or that reporter sitting there with the notepad and you're a little nervous, You can just rattle that stuff off without even thinking about it. Hone these messages. Force them on defense. We are on the offense. We are winning now. The people are on our side. They want to see us knock these guys out. I'm Radical Russ from 420 Radio. Here's information on where you can find these PowerPoints that I put together, and there's a whole bunch from other cannabis cups that I've done. They're all available at the 420 Radio shop. Here's all my contact on social media and the various streaming platforms, and if anyone has any questions, I'd be glad to take some questions. Thank you. And don't forget, you got free posters and stickers, too, if you want them. Yes, ma'am. That's a good point. Joe Kennedy made his money on bootlegging. One place to avoid or be very careful where you tread on this is Patrick Kennedy's own struggles with addiction, because it can look like you're trying to be a bully or gang up on him. If you don't know, Patrick Kennedy was a former representative from Rhode Island, six-term congressman from Rhode Island, who in a two-week span of time wrecked his car into like a drugstore somewhere and got off with a warning, and then 2 weeks later wrecked his car in Washington, D.C., admittedly high on OxyContin and alcohol. The D.C. cops gave him a ride home. Not in their cop car, not cuffed behind his back like you or me. He got just a ride home. And so now this guy who struggled with an OxyContin addiction is telling us that we need rehab for marijuana. So it's tempting to go there. It's really tempting. Oh, wait a minute here, Mr. Pill Popper. But don't, because it's going to cast you as the bad guy if you do. Anyone else? Yes. Okay, in one respect, you have to be careful to not come off as conspiracy theory guy, you know, even though sometimes there's some conspiracy going on to the general public when they're in your mindset that you're talking about, that, you know, the government's fine and drugs are bad and there's unintended consequences. And also not to get in the trap of mistaking your opponent for a cartoon villain twirling his mustache. I know, I'll do this terrible thing. Patrick Kennedy thinks he's doing the right thing. Kevin Sabet thinks he's a good guy, and they're doing it for the right reasons. So we have to be careful not to attack the fear or the reasoning that they might be focusing on, because people's fears are real, even if they're not real. You know what I mean? It's like perception's reality. Like, they're scared of their kids smoking pot and becoming addicted to heroin. Is that going to happen? No, not likely, not statistically likely at all. But the fear is still real. So if we attack their fear, we attack Patrick Kennedy coming off like that too hard, we risk demeaning that person who had that point. Yeah. Yeah. And if you can nail them on that and you can catch them in their doublespeak, that's the perfect time to do it. Yeah. Yeah, and I think your point that you made about appealing to people's sense of fairness, in America, that's a big thing that really works well, that it's just unfair what's going on. And that's why I led with that little statement about beer drinkers and cigar smokers. It's not a matter of whether I'm smoking pot, it's why are you treating me different than people who do something similar to what I do, or even worse than what I do in, you know, public health perspective. Any other questions, anyone? Ah, why does government feel a need to protect us from ourselves? Somebody else was talking, Ray was talking about government too, and it reminded me of a lyric, and I can't remember if it's Revolution, Slightly Stupid, or Echo Movement, but really, what's the difference? The lyric is, if the government cared about your health, cigarettes and liquor would be off the shelf. Why do they feel that need? Another lyric, George Clinton from Parliament likes to say, because there's more profit in pretending we're stopping it than selling it. It's really profit motive and inertia at this point, I think. Yeah. All right. Yes, sir. Yeah, you know, the industrial hemp one has been fun to watch, too, because when I first got into legalization and learning about reform, I'm an old musician. I was a long-haired bass player in a rock band, and I just smoked weed, right? So I didn't think much about hemp. You know, I carry, oh, hemp backpack, nice, right? But this is the one, as I got into reform more and more, I realized this is such a no-brainer. It's frustrating. The Drug Enforcement Administration bans the production of something that's not a drug. That seems to be completely out of their scope, wouldn't it be? Drug enforcement, not a drug. But yeah, they're banning this. And I think this is one, this is going to fall really quickly. I think before, maybe even by the 2016 election, we'll see a widespread, you know, because they're already growing the research crops in Colorado, Montana, Kentucky, I think, as well. But the general public starting to understand, the enlightenment of the public that, oh, wait, it's not a drug. And no, wait, they can't hide pot in hemp fields. That was a lot of people, a lot of squares think that we can't have hemp because then the hippies will hide the pot in the hemp fields. And I always tell them, that is the last thing, that last place they want to hide their pot to get it crossbred with something that's going to make it suck. That's the last place they want to put it. If you wanted to get rid of outdoor pot farming, you'd encourage industrial hemp growing. You'd want industrial hemp fields everywhere. I talked to guys in Southern Oregon who are Southern Oregon's like the Emerald Triangle North. They hate hemp. They're like, we want to make sure hemp is only grown on the eastern side of the state, away from where we grow all our pot. So, yeah, but I think the public's ready for it. I think by 2016, we'll see at least one or two of the states that have wide, big commercial farms going. Anybody else? Yes, sir.
So that's my presentation at the Seattle Cannabis Cup, the top 10 lies about marijuana legalization.
I'm originally from the conservative county in Idaho.
And don't have quite enough time for all the question and answers. And unfortunately, they didn't have a microphone available for the people asking the questions, so you couldn't actually hear what they were asking me. But nonetheless, it was a great presentation, and I got a lot of good responses from people about it. So thank you so much to everyone who appeared there at the cup to see the presentation. I'll make it available up on my YouTube channel just as soon as possible, the Radical Russ channel on YouTube. Plus, we'll have all the vendor videos that we upload that we'll be showing later on here in Hour 2. Also, coming up next on Hour 2, Leap's Norm Stamper on the Colbert Report. He's been a frequent guest here on the Russ Belville Show as well. Boy, if you get the Belville bump and the Colbert bump, there's no stopping you. For Big Island Zane, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us, and until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you giant, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you